Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. It is NFL opening day. We have made it to NFL season, and we welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, gents? We made it. We finally made
Finally.
It. We're here.
Finally
yes.
Made it. Absolutely. Yeah. It is an exciting time. So, Charles, I got a feeling it may not be that exciting for Titans fans on Sunday. I do not like this matchup between the Titans and the Broncos. I think it is a very difficult way to start the Cam Ward era on the road in the altitude against maybe the best defense in the NFL, certainly one of the best defenses in the NFL. So what's your take, your thoughts on the opening season matchup for the Titans against Denver?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, the Broncos are definitely the darling of the offseason, right? I mean, I think it was, I went through there and I left excited after seeing that defense. Although I was there the day that you know, Dre Greenlaw tweaked his quad again. And, you know, that's definitely going to be an issue for them losing him. But I think the defense has a chance to be, if everybody's healthy, that should be a top, you know, 2-3 defense really in the league. You know, Bo Nix obviously spent a ton of time with Sean Payton talking about, you know, where Bo Nix is going. Payton's convinced that this guy's going to be, you know, a top 5 quarterback in the next 2 years, which is kind of crazy when you consider, you know, what the thought process was on Bo Nix just, you know, a year ago. You know, we were questioning what he was going to look like as an NFL quarterback. But, you know, Peyton's amped about the running back depth. I think the offensive line health, the fact that he's got Evan Engram, which is he's been dying to have a tight end that he could move around and create mismatches. It is the one team that it was interesting. I was talking to somebody and he asked me, it was another guy in the NFL, and he asked me, you know, what do you think, are we over our skis, you know, with anybody in the NFL right now? And I thought to myself, you know, everybody's on the Broncos bandwagon, and does it work out when everybody just jumps on a team and says, you know, it looks like this team has really pulled it all together. But I think I don't know if there's any other team in the NFL that people have really piled in on so heavily than the Broncos. And again, in a division where anytime every single time I doubt the Kansas City Chiefs, I end up looking silly. But I mean the depth here in Denver and, you know, I think kind of how Nick's looked last season and, you know, where I think he fits, in the NFL amongst quarterbacks and coach combos, probably right up there. You know, he and Peyton are probably as good a fit as almost anybody in the league in terms of what his skill set is and, you know, what Peyton's going to be able to do with him. I would not have picked this being the place that ultimately they start. But I will say, look, if there was a guy that I would take off that Denver, you know, defense that isn't Pat Surtain, I think they expect Dre Greenlaw, if he's healthy, to be maybe their second best defensive player over the course of the season. But the guy is like, you know, some people are like, he's made of glass, like he's never healthy. So that's a pretty significant loss, I think, for them in the first week of the season.
Yeah. When he does play, he is a great football player. Okay. So I missed this, Charles, but we got to talk about this. So Mark Davis confirmed that the much speculated Tom Brady, that mother farter, they stuck with him, was one Derek Carr, huh?
Yep. Yeah. Mark Davis finally came out and admitted that he wanted to sign Tom Brady. You know, it was ultimately John Gruden and Mike Mayock.
Mayock, man.
Stellar moves. Yeah. I mean, you go back and really look at the personnel moves made with that Raiders regime during that era of those two guys. I mean, you're just like, wow, man, they smoked a lot of draft picks. I mean, you know, Antonio Brown not signing Tom Brady, you're like, wow, this is pretty epic. But yeah, we can finally put it to bed. It was Derek Carr, which is obviously one of those guys that was, I think, of the speculation when Tom said that he was just aghast that a franchise was going to stick with their quarterback over him. Carr was always near the top, right? But we just never knew for sure. And now Davis comes out and says, I just, come on, man. I can't believe that you picked Derek Carr, over Tom Brady. And then Tom Brady, obviously Mark Davis is just, so upset that Brady ends up going to Tampa Bay and winning a Super Bowl with the Buccaneers. And I think it's hilarious, though, that this is the way, like, we're starting a season and it's like, oh, the Raiders, there's positive things to talk about with Pete Carroll. And let's just go ahead and let's throw this out there to start the season and let everybody know this mistake we made in the past. What a Raiders thing to do to start a season this way. I'm like, why would you do it? Right? Like, we're like, everybody's happy right now. You're pushing off into the unknown. You can sell the idea that maybe we're a double-digit win team with Pete Carroll. We got John Spytek in here. We're driving a harder edge with our roster. But let's go ahead and go back to this moment in time and confirm.
Let's talk about the bad old days.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the time I wanted Tom Brady as an owner and somehow didn't do it. Bro, you're the owner. Like, if you really wanted Tom Brady, just do it. You've overruled past regimes on guys before. And this was the time you didn't. Come on, man.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So, Charles, since the last time we've talked to you, Micah Parsons is now a Green Bay Packer. The trade actually happened, and he goes from Dallas to the Packers. So, a couple things here. What, in your mind, does that do for the Packers in the NFC? And your surprise level that Jerry Jones actually let it get to this point, where do the Cowboys go from here?
Well, I'll say this for the Packers, man. It was interesting, and I think we talked about it on the last show, that, Brian Gutekunst came out, and he was like, I thought it was rhetoric, even though everybody was talking about, hey, he could end up, Micah Parsons could end up in Green Bay, and that they have the cap space to bring him on, and, there's this opportunity to take this swing. I just thought, man, that's, Brian Gutekunst, as the general manager of the Packers, has never pulled this kind of thing off. I mean, not with this. And frankly, nobody really has. I mean, this is a fairly unprecedented moment. Obviously, we can go back to Khalil Mack. There's been other NFL trades that, have been massive. But for the Cowboys to, number one, deal him, which is shocking enough, and then the team to step up and do it, being one that, again, the Packers don't have an owner, which is what's interesting about this. When you don't have a central owner, typically deals like this happen because you have an owner who's sitting there going, pressing a general manager, pressing a team president, pressing a head coach, saying, I want X to happen now. We have to turn a corner. Look at where our cap is. This is our window. And that's how big trades often can end up happening. And yet you don't have that pressure when you're the Green Bay Packers. There's no owners pressing on you. And it's always an interesting dynamic when the Packers are involved with anybody, because there's no owner, pushing you away from a deal. There's no owner pushing you into a deal. So you get more, I would argue, some of the moves that the Packers made are more authentically streamlined through a general manager and a head coach. Like, there's no more, quote unquote, blamable commodity in the NFL than probably the Packers general manager, because there's just no owner behind it stopping things or forcing things, where I believe in most other NFL cities, the owner weighs in heavily anytime there's a move of this magnitude made. So, Gutekunst, when I saw it, I'm like, wow, he's really, he's basically saying, I'm creating my history right now. Either this is going to work or it's not. And it's all on me. I'm not going to be able to point the finger at anybody else later. This was my decision. And it was already, I think, a really good defense. I think Edgerrin Cooper, the linebacker there, who's a rookie last season, is a player who's potentially going to be great on this level. I think they're expecting he could take another big step this season. They had, you know, defensive tackle depth. So it didn't surprise me that they were willing to move on from Kenny Clark. You know, obviously there's Rashawn Gary. There's, you know, up and down that defense, it's a pretty good, you know, roster for the Packers, and maybe low key, you know, could be the best unit, even without Micah Parsons, could have been the best unit on that team and carve out wins. And now you add Parsons on top of it, which is just, I mean, it's a stunner that, you know, the Cowboys are willing to move on from him. And obviously the backlash, the, you know, Jerry Jones, it's just, what a mess. The press conference where he's talking about, hey, we can turn these draft picks into Pro Bowl players. And I'm like, sure, that's great. I mean, there's a lot of, Snoop Huntley was a Pro Bowl player. Like, yeah. Pro Bowl players are kind of a dime a dozen in the NFL. You don't get a player of this magnitude, Micah Parsons. The one thing I will say that surprised me, you know, clearly the back issues are a little more real with Micah Parsons than maybe I thought. And if he is to the point where he does end up needing to get epidurals to play football games, that is definitely frightening. Like, that's certainly not a good thing if that's how this ultimately unfolds with him. But, you know, look, the Packers, I shoot your shot. I mean, you sign him to a deal, $47 million annual average value. You pay him all the, you know, the guaranteed money. You are bringing him in to be a defensive player of the year candidate every single year for, I'd say, the next 5 years, right? That's the level he's got to play at. If he actually plays at that level, I don't see any reason why the Packers, with this, you know, collection of talent, unless Jordan Love just falls apart, right? I don't see any reason why this doesn't put the Packers into at least the playoff picture every single team. I mean, there's no doubt they have to be a playoff team every single year and also have a Super Bowl window that's been pushed open by this move.
So Chapel Bill, Charles, and we may as well talk about him. We've been talking about him a lot this week. Let me tell you something. And frankly, there may be a little bit of enjoyment in it, but you know, this is, we've already talked with you about like the NFL sort of, you know, obviously not looking very favorably on him. I mean, I look at this like, I think the plan here is probably this is his last job. He does it a little bit. He's able to hand it off to Steve, right? I mean, that's the idea. And then he's done, I would assume. But what is the NFL reaction to what we saw a few days ago?
I don't think it's – if you don't like Bill, like, you were, you know, laughing. You know, you were probably excited by what unfolded. I mean, like, it doesn't – there were a lot of people, I think, in the league who – you know, have a negative opinion of how Bill carries himself and, you know, some of the attention he's gotten over the years, that believe that Tom Brady was the guy and not Bill. Like, everybody has these, there's definitely a lot of these conversations that we have in media, also are had in, you know, coaching offices, they're had in, you know, the front office, a lot of general managers. You know, it's something that there are a few general managers where you don't bring up, you know, where you bring up Bill Belichick or Tom Brady or whatever, that don't have some kind of opinion of this. So I think everybody was watching that opener with curiosity, right? It's like, what can he replicate on the college football level? How much of the failures of the last couple years in New England, you know, were really on him? And then just to see him get smoked, I mean, just absolutely, I think everybody was like, whoa, like that. It was stunning in a way that I don't think anybody expected out of the box that something that would happen. And I thought it was funny that in the wake of it, all of a sudden you start to hear, well, you know, North Carolina doesn't really have any talent. Like, there's no, you know, they don't got, I'm like, yeah, you know what? You can't profess that now. That's not the, after the off season of, you know, Bill professionalizing it, and, you know, just bringing everything that is created on the NFL level and really translating that to North Carolina. And then, you know, over the expanse he's been here, we've seen all the pictures of, like, who's going to North Carolina to be with Bill, the talent he's brought in, whatever. You can't all of a sudden tell me that, oh, geez, you know, they get absolutely spanked, and now it's, you know, oh, well, there's just no talent there. That nobody wants to hear that. And it has nothing to do with Jordan Hudson, by the way. It has nothing to do with his personal relationship. Like, the sideshow circus, and I think this is what's most interesting about this, and we've talked about this, you can have the entire sideshow circus. If you win games, no one's going to care. If you go to UNC and you end up making them into a top 25 program, you know, if they push to potentially be in the you know, playoff scheme, no one's going to care at all. They're not going to care about the nepotism. They're not going to care about Steven Belichick, you know, potentially having a job lined up for him after Bill leaves. But it's all predicated on winning. You lose like this, I mean, you're about as smoked on an NFL level. I can't imagine. Someone asked me, like, what do you think? Do you think at this point, like, this is how it goes, and, you know, the UNC experience is really ugly in 2025, how does he get a job in the NFL? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it would have to be an owner having abject failure in his organization, having a relationship with Bill, and basically saying to themselves, I'm as desperate as I can possibly be, and I'm going to reach for this guy now at this point, even though it's about as damaged as it could possibly be. I would ask you guys, like, let's say, you know, because Jerry Jones has talked about Bill in the past. He's expressed regret, you know, at times where he's like, I thought I had an opportunity to hire him. I didn't do it. Let's say that Brian Schottenheimer is just the Michael Parsons trade goes horribly. Kenny Clark is, you know, he's an okay defensive tackle, but the problems they have are the problems they have. The defense is as horrible as we've been told it will be without Micah Parsons, and Brian Schottenheimer starts 1-7. Like, is Jerry Jones the guy who sits there and goes, I have to make a desperation move? And then does Bill come into play there? Like, you tell me how you see him on an NFL roster in 2026.
Well, he did just trade Micah Parsons. You know, he did just trade Micah Parsons, so he's done some crazy stuff.
That's his only hope. I mean, well, you're right.
That's I mean, but that right. That's what I'm asking. I mean, like, is that the? I don't see any other way to justify.
No, I'm with you.
The whole sideshow, and then if he loses on top of it,
yeah.
I just don't. No one's going to back that. So it has to be an owner-driven move at that point. And it has to be an owner who's desperate enough to do it. And other than Jerry at this point, I don't know, you know, where else that could ultimately happen. So, another thing too, have you guys, I don't want to overblow it, but I will say, I can't recall ever seeing in my mind, I thought about it. I'm like, man, all the years I've covered the league and even when I've watched college football, have I ever seen a coach on the sideline before a game and their significant other literally, like, with them on the sideline when there's, like, clearly things to be done, you know, like, right prior to a game. Do you recall that? Do you ever remember seeing – I don't want to really get out of pocket on it, but I thought that was kind of shocking to me that kind of unfolded. They got, you know, people had video of it. I was like, man, I've never seen that before.
Well, first of all, there were a lot of people, like this stupid account, Dov Kleeman or whatever, is like playing it like it was in the middle of the game. And it's like, well, if you look, there's players doing like backpedal warm-ups.
It was pregame. Yeah. So, yeah. No, I knew it was pregame.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, a lot of people out there think it was during the game. I've seen families on the field before games, but I guess nothing comes to mind where in terms of like – you know, wife coming up to coach to say something. So yeah, that's it's.
I had a scout who was watching and was not at the game, but was like, you know, paying attention online to what was going on and pulling stuff. And he said to me, he goes, "Do you remember in all the years you've covered the league, ever seeing Bill's significant other ever?" And I started laughing. I'm like, no, like definitely not in a football capacity. Not like, you know, I laughed and I was like, well, there's the, you know, when they did the documentary and they had the Halloween thing where Randy Moss invites everybody shows up. Yeah. You know, like that. I was like, I remember that. I'm like, but other than that, no, never. I'm like, this is certainly new territory for Bill to have this kind of unfold. And by the way, I think people can go ahead and say, hey, the media is not the one driving this anymore. we're not driving this. Like, this is doing this on its own. We don't have anything to do with this. It is creating its own kind of craziness, and it's not our fault for watching at this point. Like, you can kill the media for whatever you want, but at this point, it everybody should agree. Oh yeah, no, that really is a total mess. It's nobody's fault for looking at it.
So, Charles, it was about this time a year ago, we were taking a look at the NFC, and if you were having a conversation about the favorite in the NFC, it probably began with the San Francisco 49ers. Now, we know what happened last year. They got a lot of injuries. They've changed over their roster a little bit. But they did just sign Brock Purdy to a big deal. They've got Kyle Shanahan. You know, McCaffrey's back in there. Kittle's in there. There's still some talent there. So what do you make of them heading into this year with a roster that feels like it's gotten a little old, but also you just gave the quarterback a huge deal?
Yeah, I mean, there's the talent drain, obviously. But here's the thing about San Francisco. They're still well coached. There's still talent on the roster. It's not, you know, they've lost a multitude of guys. When I went through there, you know, John Lynch said to me at one point, the general manager, he said, we had to have set a record, right, of guys that we left, that left our organization and went and signed multi-year deals elsewhere. And the point he's making is, like, when you look at a roster and you see guys depart and they go somewhere else in free agency, they sign a one-year deal, you're kind of like, is that really a loss? You know, other franchises aren't really they're not taking big risks on the talent, you know, when you're only signing to a one-year deal. But when you see guys leave and they sign for really anything more than 1 year and they get some guaranteed money, you're like, oh, okay, wherever they left, they just suffered a loss. They some talent went out the door. The 49ers had a ton of that this offseason. I mean, it was just, you know, a multitude of players up and down the roster ended up signing more than 1 year deals when they left, but there's still talent there. There's still, you know, the coaching is still, you know, I believe in Kyle Shanahan. You know, I think in a way, sometimes I think he pulls together when things are bad. And Purdy, I still think Purdy in that system is, you know, a solid quarterback. I think he's a top 14, 13, 12 quarterback consistently, as long as he's got, you know, guys to throw to. I think Ricky Pearsall, I don't know if he can be the number one wide receiver there, but you're going to see him be one of these players that takes a pretty big step forward if he can kind of replicate what he's doing down the stretch for them. Juwan Jennings, you know, is another guy who I think is really solid. It's not – I don't look at the roster and go, man, there's just nothing here anymore. And then when I look at the schedule, I think that's what's interesting is, you know, look at their schedule. I mean, it's not – like – I know you got to be careful here because at the beginning of the season, I know by October, I'm always like, man, I thought that team had a really easy schedule. Right. It's not as easy as I thought. this could be, but let's be real here. I mean, you know, the first month of the season, you know, you go to Seattle. Okay. You know, it's tough. Seattle should be a pretty good team. You go to New Orleans. I think a lot of people think New Orleans is a contention for the number one pick in the draft. You come back home, you play Arizona. I mean, let's see. I mean, we don't know about it. I think Arizona could be a good team this year. Again, though, with Kyler Murray, if you told me Kyler Murray's not going to be their quarterback, you know, moving forward at some point in 2026, maybe still on the roster, but they supplant him with someone else on the, you know, in the starting job, I think that's still possible in Arizona. So to me, that's still up in there. Jacksonville now in week four. You know, the schedule overall, when you look at who the 49ers face, it's a semi-soft schedule, right? I mean, there's some teams on there where you're like, okay, well, you know, the Rams, they go and play the Rams. That could be a pretty good team. You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, maybe the Houston Texans. You know, obviously they play the Rams twice. But other than that, you're not sitting there going, I'm looking at a bunch of, like, Super Bowl favorites here on their roster, on their schedule. Maybe other than the Rams, I don't know that you look at their schedule and go, yeah, that team, I could see that team in the Super Bowl. I don't hear a lot of people talking about Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl, right? I don't hear a lot of people talking about Arizona turning a corner. You know, they're out of conference schedule when you talk about, like, the Cleveland Browns, the Indianapolis Colts. It's, you just see a lot of team. I mean, honestly, the Titans, right? They play the Titans. We don't know. Yeah, we don't know what the Titans are at this stage. I mean, we've talked in the offseason, we talked five or six wins. I mean, it's just not a difficult schedule for the 49ers. So, you know, with what the roster ultimately is, I wouldn't be surprised if San Francisco ends up being a team that's a little bit better than maybe people think. I don't, you know, could it be a playoff team? Yeah, absolutely. I think it could be a play. I could be with this schedule. Like, could it be a 10-win team? Probably should be a 10-win team unless there's, you know, injuries on top of it. I still think they're good enough to be a 10-win team in that NFC.
Well, Charles, we've made it. We appreciate so much you hanging with us this morning. We're excited for the season to begin this week and this weekend, and we will talk to you next week, my friend.
I appreciate it, guys. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. We will react to what Charles had to say. We will revisit our picks for the Titans season coming up next as well. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. The Commodores travel to Blacksburg to take on Virginia Tech this Saturday. Pregame at 5 o'clock, kickoff at 6:30. Vanderbilt football brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Smoky Mountain Tops. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5 The Game. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment there. Lots of good stuff from Charles. He joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock and will throughout the season here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe, not that I don't think there's any great breaking news, but doesn't sound like Bill Belichick is going to be going back to the NFL. I mean, there was the theory of the 1 year and they could get out of his contract after the 1 year if the NFL comes calling. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and again, I really do think that the plan here has been get Steve Belichick his own program. you gotta win a little bit to do that, you know. But I do. I think that the plan is right off in the sunset that NFL-level defense is awesome, and Steve Belichick is the head coach of the UNC Tar Heels for a long period of time. I think that's the plan. Not off to a great start, but his hair is still interesting.
Steve, I'm going to go out here and we're just going to get our ass kicked and we're going to do it repeatedly. And then when you take over, you're going to look great by comparison. Thank you.
Yeah. What does Steve think about his girlfriend-in-law or whatever you call that? Who's like way younger than him.
I was about to say, I don't know. It's a good question.
I actually been meaning to bring up all week the Dov Kleeman thing. But this whole, we've talked about this account. Like it was a fake person. Now it's actually a real person, I guess, or something.
I have no idea.
It tweets every single thing about the NFL.
Are we sure it's a real person? I don't know. I'm still not convinced.
There is a person now who like does a podcast who says that's his name. But then there previously it was like, but it's like it used to belong to somebody else. I don't know, man. All I know is like I don't pay too much attention to it, but there's a lot of tweets like this that are totally misleading. And this was another one. It's like, it wasn't in the middle of a game. That would be insane. Like, but to Charles' point, yeah.
Come on down.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, what the hell are you doing blitzing again on third down?
Bill, can we go home?
Yeah. but it is still, even like during that time, pregame warmups, I can't think of another example, I must say.
Is she still being CC'd on all the emails?
That's a good question. I know that the doc wasn't going to happen. It's like she was going to be in charge, and it didn't. But then they figured it out, and it is going to happen. And now I bet you they're like, God, I wish it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
That first episode will be a real beaut.
I also think you can add Charles to the list of people who don't think the Broncos in week one are a great, great matchup for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is when, you know, in the NFL, you sometimes get reminded that it's the NFL because the other team is in the NFL, if that makes sense. So I'm just saying, I'm starting to flip Adam in Portland's way. Like we're all talking up the Broncos like they're, you know, like they're the Orange Crush Broncos, like they're the Elway, Ricky Natil, Sammy Winder Broncos, Carl Mecklenburg Broncos, yeah. And maybe we should, but yeah, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look like a good matchup.
I mean, Lloyd Cushenberry revenge game. Good. Yeah. We probably hadn't factored that in enough this week.
There you go. See? Yeah.
That's one arm push-ups.
That's right.
Remember, it was
just
like,
don't do one arm like leg raises on the Achilles.
Yeah, don't do that. I just go back to the first time Tannehill played against the Dolphins. It was like, you guys won't believe the level of quarterback that you're going to see from Ryan Tannehill this week. And then the Titans went out there and just killed him. It was 34-3.
Cushenberry is going to snap that. Cam Ward better watch out. He's going to break all his fingers. Those snaps are coming back so hard. I tell you what, man.
You better be ready to go. Cam.
Snapping with aggression.
Speaking of the Titans, we gave our official Titans expectations earlier in the show if you missed it. Joe Rexroad has the Titans finishing with a 6-11 record. Ian Safar has the Titans at 5-12. I have the Titans at 5-12, including, I believe, what was it, Joe? A 1-10 start? That'd be a tough one.
Sounds real sweet.
Real good stuff there. I mean, the fact of the matter is most of their winnable games on paper are toward the end of the year. You got Jacksonville twice. You're on the road at Cleveland. You got the lowly New Orleans Saints coming into town later in the year. I think week 3 against Indianapolis is a huge game for this team. I think week 1 is not a very good matchup against Denver. I don't think week 2 against LA is much better. Don't think that's a very good matchup either. I think week 3 is very crucial for this Titans team earlier in the year at home against the Indianapolis Colts. But, Joe, I mean, I didn't even think about this earlier, but the line, the over-under for Titans wins this year, I believe, has been at 5.5, and you're at 6. Me and Ian are at 5, so right there at the line.
Vegas knows. Vegas knows. For the record, so just to be clear, this means that I am the most optimistic of the three of us, and also I am picking them to double their wins from last year.
That is correct.
That's some sunshine, if you really think about it.
I agree. I mean, this is like a Jack on the text line says, Joe, the Homer Rex Road.
There you go.
Yeah, apparently everything other than Tennessee, which last week he just absolutely hated. He was not a Vol last week. But other than that, he was good.
GB Joe, Vandy Joe, and
we got to come up with a Titan one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Titan Joe just doesn't sound. Yeah, I'll come up with something.
Yeah, got to come up with something on that front. But bottom line is expectations not that high for the Tennessee Titans this year. Again, what does it look like? What's the process there? You know, we have had some people on the text line today say the Titans could flirt with 8 or 9 wins. So there's that to keep in mind. We'll see what happens on that front. I look at the schedule part of it, and I really hope it doesn't play out the way I think it might, which is very little success early in the year. Like, I think you could be talking 1 win through like the first 7-8 weeks, which would just be brutal, abysmal to be around here and watch.
Yeah, like it really is. And I'll go back to Jeff again on the 6 o'clock hour. Like, some of it is the biggest thing, of course, is Cam Ward, but some of it also is just have games that matter in November, like not even December necessarily. Yeah. Okay. Like, because your scenario kills November.
It does.
And if November is wiped out, like, we've already spent in the last few football seasons way too much time talking about possible draft picks.
Yes, we have.
Like, the draft already is too dominant. But when you're in an NFL town with a buns team, I mean, it absolutely just looms way too large. And I don't know if I can do that again. I just don't know if I can do it, man.
I don't know if I can either, and hopefully we won't have to. Look, you know, Liam said it earlier on the text line. Are we not due for like a positive surprise, right? Like, you know, the Titans were so bad last year. The Predators were so bad last year. Like, aren't we due for some sort of positive surprise around here? Like, I'm not even talking the Titans making the playoffs, but just make things interesting down the stretch. Let Cam Ward come in and be just really good from the jump. Let's create some excitement for this football team around here.
Probably not.
Oops.
I mean, look, I would... You know, I could find it. I don't know. I can't remember. But 9 years ago, going into that season, you know, we did predictions at the Tennessean, and I probably picked the Titans to win 5 games. And thanks, number one, more than anything, to a revamped offensive line, revamped at tackle, but really, you know, that's and center. But thanks mostly to that, and then a lot of other things that were better than you thought. You know, that team went 9-7 and should have won the division if Marcus Mariota didn't break his leg. There's my example I'm going to throw out of a team that, again, 5 wins in the previous 2 seasons. Everybody still thought they'd be cheeks. and the offensive line play is why. And again, you had a young quarterback who really benefited from that and from running the ball. And yes, they had a better back, DeMarco Murray, plus Derrick Henry's a rookie, but DeMarco Murray than they do now. But I'm just saying, if you are better up front, significantly better, which I think is possible, because again, significantly better from really bad is possible, then, you know, maybe it is a little better than we think. And like you said earlier, Robbie, if you can just steal a couple of those early, the back end of the schedule does have a lot of opportunity.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans, plus a conspiracy that has been long running here on this program. Has it finally come to an end? We'll get into that coming up next as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Tune in for the NFL Game of the Week on 1025 The Game. The Cowboys taking on the Philadelphia Eagles tonight at 7:20. The NFL Game of the Week presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12th South. The NFL season is tonight, and the Cowboys and the Eagles get things kicked off. Looking forward to that game. Joe, we have had a long-standing theory here on this program, at least that I've thrown out there and believe. I don't know if I'm going to speak for you in this instance, of the Connor Stallion situation at Michigan and how maybe that affected the matchup in 2022 between Tennessee and South Carolina, in which a lot of my hatred for Shane Beamer goes back to this moment, I'll be honest with you. Well, Connor Stallions was apparently on a podcast with our good friend David Ubben. And addressed this rumor. Ubben asked him about whether or not there was any sort of connections between Connor Stallions, the Michigan scandal, and the Tennessee-South Carolina game. Here's what Connor Stallions had to say.
I was not at the South Carolina game in 2022, but it's a very popular theory because you guys did buy a ticket to the 2-day Tennessee game that you or someone associated with you had given South Carolina Tennessee's signals before that game when they scored 63 points, derailed Tennessee's championship run. What do you make of that theory?
One of the dozens of conspiracies that are out there. I've never met anyone at South Carolina. I'll also say this about Tennessee too. Joe Milton, I'd ask Joe Milton and Hendon Hooker. They know the truth, and they, I'm tight with both of them. There was no trying to screw over Tennessee.
What does that mean? I'd ask Joe Milton, Hendon Hooker. They know the truth. What does that mean?
They're friends of mine, so they will agree with me when I lie about things I didn't do. Like I did in an entire documentary, which anyone with a brain could see through all the lies that I told in the documentary, which later were revealed when I said I wasn't on the sideline for Michigan State, Central Michigan, and actually it was confirmed I was on the sideline.
He says he didn't do it. He says there's no connection between the Michigan scandal and the Tennessee-South Carolina game back in 2022. Joe, does this clear the air, or do you remain skeptical?
Well, I'm skeptical of any of it. Like, you're buying tickets at certain games for a reason. And, again, think about that year. Tennessee was absolutely a team in Michigan's way, right? Now, yes. I've said this on the show before, too. I have talked to multiple members of that Tennessee coaching staff about this very thing. And I will say that, again, just like, what do you really think? I didn't get this. Oh yeah, we totally think he did. It was kind of like, yeah, we've talked about it, but like, no, who knows? Like no way to know and all that stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. It's like, it's insane the success they had that night, again, offensively. Now, how much, you know, you think about what Connor Stallions did for Michigan, you think more about when they had the ball, right? Being able to attack. But, I mean, there were examples both ways, like in the Ohio State game. So, I don't know. I never have heard anybody say, oh, my God, no question. Like, you know, we got screwed over. But how could you not think it a little bit, considering that he was that, like, he had that place staked out? And most of the, you look at all the places they went, it wasn't just random. I mean, there were reasons to go to certain places.
He did it. You'll never convince me otherwise.
Never. I mean, his defense points. There was weak.
Yeah.
You know?
Ask Hendon Hooker. All right, let's ask him. Let's go to Carolina and get it.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
So Texter says you guys are reaching on this one. Come on. I mean, look, we're not like this is not just
this is not our conspiracy.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that's been around for a long time. Another Texter says, or it's completely plausible South Carolina just beat Tennessee's ass. Whether you like him or not, Beaner's a good coach. That's fine. Oh, he says, I know it's a Homer radio show, but Tennessee football isn't the greatest thing on the planet. So dumb. Okay, calm down. Yeah, I understand you're a South Carolina fan. Also understand that if you go back and look at both of those teams' performances that year leading into that game, the idea that South Carolina would score like touchdowns on 9 straight possessions would have seemed a little crazy, okay?
Also, we didn't make this up. This is out there long before our show, but thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hey, man, I don't know. I think with Connor Stallions, my big thing is I just like the web of lies that he spun, including throwing his phone into the pond so no one would ever see all the things seriously, that's what he did. He threw his phone into a freaking pond so they'd never see the interactions with him and whoever in that program. It's just hard to believe. And again, the documentary is like an attempt to spin things, and it was like, oh, you just totally exposed yourself.
Right. Look, we will never know for sure what happened in 2022 on that night in South Carolina. It is funny, though, that Ubben brought that up, and he just to me was like, yeah, ask Joe Milton, Hendon Hooker. Okay. We'll see. I guess he's friends. Apparently, Connor Stallion is friends with a lot of people, by the way. Good to know. Did Joe freeze?
It appears that way. Yeah.
I think he might have. He's frozen in time.
Look what Connor Stallions did.
Connor Stallions has hacked Rex Rose.
He has ears everywhere. The dude cannot be unplugged. He is everywhere at all times. And if you talk anything about him, he will find out and cancel you and disconnect you somehow.
This is absolutely unbelievable what just happened there. But a lot of Vols fans now text again all over the South Carolina fans on the text line there. Got Cameron that says, listen to South Carolina boys texting in. Beamer's a doofus, 8-4 this year at best. So now we have reignited the rivalry, I guess, between Tennessee and South Carolina. That's going to do it for us today here on the program. The NFL season begins tonight. The Eagles and the Cowboys. And again, you can check that out here on 102.5 The Game at 7:20. Enjoy football. We got football. We got pro football tonight. We got pro football Friday. We got pro football all day on Sunday, and we're looking forward to it. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Next Minute Up with Jake Lyman is next. This is 102.5 The Game.